Saha. He Shukadev Goswami. Go Dohana Matram. Only for the time of milking the cow.
He certainly.
Graheshu.
In the house.
Graha Medinam. Of the householders. Avekshate. Waits. Mahabhaga. The most fortunate. Tirti. Pilgrimage. Kurvan.
Transforming.
Tat ashramam.
The residence.
Translation. He, Shukadev Goswami, was accustomed to stay at the door of a householder only long enough for a cow to be milked. And he did this just to sanctify the residence. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Shukadev Goswami met Emperor Parikshit and explained the text of Srimad Bhagavatam. He was not accustomed to stay at any householder's residence for more than a half an hour at the time of milking the cow. I guess I've been staying too long. And he would take alms from the fortunate householder. That was to sanctify the residence by his auspicious presence. Therefore, Shukadev Goswami is an ideal preacher established in the transcendental position. From his activities, those who are in the renounced order of life and dedicated to the mission of preaching the message of Godhead should learn that they have no business with the householders, save and except to enlighten them in transcendental knowledge. Such asking for alms from the householder should be for the purpose of sanctifying his home. One who is in the renounced order of life should not be allured by the glamour of the householder's worldly possessions. Because now the sannyasis have more worldly possessions. More gadgets. And thus become subservient to worldly men. For one who is in the renounced order of life, this is much more dangerous than drinking poison and committing suicide. Phew, heavy verse. Sago dohana matram hi graheshu grihamedinam avekshate mahavagas tirti kurvam stadashramam. So omaganata vidandasha gananjana shalakaya tatsuru miditam yenetas mai shigurave namaha. So, to not discourage any of you who happen to be householders, it's like, when we were young, if we wanted to denigrate or criticize someone, you know, just to keep everybody away from them, we would say that they have the cooties. Did you ever hear this before? Do you have that expression here? You want to explain that, what that means? In... You understand? That's it. In English, it's called the cooties. Like we, the kids, would say to another kid, "You have the cooties." So, of course, generally that meant you had lice or something like that in your hair, or you smell bad, or people should stay away, and therefore everyone stayed away from you. So it seems like this is what's being said about the householders in this verse, right? They have the cooties. But it's not really what's being said. I mean, let me explain what the Sanskrit is saying here. The second line here is graheshu graha medinam. Graheshu, of course, means house in this particular context. And graha medinam doesn't mean grahasta. It doesn't say grahasta here. Because the grahasta is one of the ashrams. Just like we have our varna ashram system. The varnas are the particular types of work that you're accustomed to doing. It's like we were talking last night about varnas, right? We talked about how a child, when you test them, they're attracted to a certain thing. And Narayan was attracted to what?
Books.
And Christian was attracted to what?
So,
so that's Varna. You know, Varna means Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. And each of the Varnas have their particular quality. So as far as the ashramas are concerned, it actually comes from the word ashraya, which means basically to take shelter. And in this particular context, it means taking shelter from the material world, you know, escape from the material world. So just like sometimes we misuse the word ashram to indicate a place where we sleep. Like you say, that's my ashram. That's my home. You know, it doesn't mean home. It means ashraya, that some place where you take shelter from the material world. So ashram, like a spiritual ashram. So the there's a grihastha ashram, and there's a grihamedi griheshu. It's a grihamedi home. So medi is actually an interesting word. Prabhupada describes it as being like a bull that's being led around by his nose. I don't know if you've ever seen like a bull. Sometimes they put a nose ring in the bull. Do they do that here?
Yeah. Everywhere.
Everywhere. They do that. And in America, they actually have these, if you don't have a nose ring, they have these clamps. Because I used to work with cows. I know how to do these things. I was a cowboy. Not that type of cowboy, you know, like shooting people, Indians and everything like that. But I was a cow, I was a cowboy. I used to take care of cows. I mean, so I know about. So you have the clamp that goes in the nose. And the bull is led around in a circle, generally, like that. Or plowing the fields or something like that. And the bull is considered less intelligent. Just like a... Like Prabhupada would say, someone would have a gobar brain, gobar in their brain. That means cow manure or bull manure. You know, the bull's less intelligent. Why is that? Because basically they don't remember very much. They're not like the proverbial elephant that never forgets. Anyone who's worked with bulls or cows knows that if you're going to train them to plow the field, you've got to work with them every day. Because after about 2 or 3 days, they actually forget. You know, they forget. They can learn certain simple commands like ji and haw. You know what that is? That means left and right. You know, turn left, turn right. But after a few days, they actually forget, and you got to retrain them. And you got to start from the time that they're little babies, you know, calves, and training them. It's not that you can take a grown animal, a grown cow, or a grown bull, and then train them up when they're like 5 years old. I tried that one time, and it was like a rodeo. You know what a rodeo is? Where you're going with the lasso at the cow or the bull trying to catch them, and they're just like jumping. So anyway, they're less intelligent. So that's why the word griha medhi. So those who are grihamedis, as opposed to grahasthas, they're actually attached, they're led around the nose, by their senses. Adanda gopir vishatam tamikshram punak punas charvitachar vananam. In other words, because they're led around the nose by the nose, or whatever other senses there are that we can't mention in class, then they're engaged in stereotyped activities. Stereotype means that it's just basically the same thing. You know, like Prabhupada would say, the same wine in different bottles, the old wine in different bottles. So it's the same thing. It's just like, it's very boring to those who are transcendental. Very, very boring. Like romantic affairs, they're quite boring. You know, like if someone... Maybe not for all of you, but for me, they're quite romantic, quite boring. You know, whenever I'm in an airplane, they have some romantic film, and the person's going, "Oh, you're the love of my life. You're everything. You're the stars in my eyes," or, you know, whatever stupid thing they say. It's actually quite boring. Except when one's an illusion. Then it becomes exciting. It's just like when one takes intoxication. I remember during the 1960s that people would take this LSD stuff. And then practically any foolish thing they said became like exciting. So one is under the influence of his senses. As I'm to go here, we should come from tremendous ignorance. Then they can keep doing the same thing over and over again. Do you love me? Yes, I do. How much do you love me? Let me tell you the ways I love you. You know, anyway, they... You never get me flowers. I remember what household. The wife said, you never get me flowers. And the man said, flowers are for the deities, you know. Not for some conditioned soul with a material body. So that was a disaster. I can't say. It was an absolute disaster. Don't say like that.
I love
that. Yeah, do you love me? Oh, I love all living entities because they're part and parcel of Krishna. That's also a disaster. Spirit soul. Hello, spirit soul. So, anyway. So that's Grihamedi. But a householder, a grahasta, he lives his life for Krishna consciousness. And, of course, it's not that he hates his wife or the wife hates the husband and says, you know, you're just Maya to me. You're just like an agent of Maya. I mean, that's not, you know, there's naturally love there. I mean, Vaishnavas should have love for each other. It's not that they should just, like, consider their wife to be an impediment in devotional service. Especially if the wife or husband is a devotee. Of course, if they're not devotees, or if they commit offenses, that's a different thing. Like that story of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's daughter, her name was Sati, she was married to a particular gentleman named Amoga. And Amoga had a tendency to criticize. And so one day, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was taking prasadam at Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was trying to keep Amoga from seeing Lord Chaitanya's eating, because Lord Chaitanya sometimes would eat healthily, not too much, but he would eat a healthy lunch. And so finally, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya let down his guard, and Amoga looked in and he said, this is he's eating as much as 10 men. And Lord Chaitanya thought it was humorous. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he became very angry and started to chase after Amoga, like to hit him with a stick. And he said after that point, of course he couldn't catch Amoga, because Amoga was far younger than him. He said after that point that my daughter is now a widow. Sati is now a widow. You know, she has no husband. Because, you know, this guy offended. Of course, later on there was a happy ending to the story. Amoga got cholera. That's not the happy ending. But then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Amoga as he was lying down with cholera and said, you know, the contamination or offenses or envy can't reside in the heart of a pure soul, so get up and chant. So Amoga got up and he was relieved of his offense. He got again together with Sati. So in that case, you know, you can see that it's not an appropriate marriage situation where someone's an offender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And another story in the Bhagavatam is not of a wife or a husband. There was King Anga, and he had a terrible son. His son's name was Vena, and Vena, he had this habit of killing his friends when he went to play with them. Pretty bad habit, isn't it? His mother would ask him, you know, where are your friends, Vena? Well, I just killed them, you know, no problem. Because he was the king's son, it wasn't a problem. You know, you can get away with anything. And so his father, that is Anga, King Anga, was thinking, what a bad son. But then he thought, what a great son. Because he's giving me an excuse to head for the hills. Surrender to Krishna. So, therefore, you know, you can see several different instances where if something was not actually conducive to Krishna consciousness, then, you know, someone would renounce the situation. Of course, then you have the other example of Srila Prabhupada's sister, who was married to a debauchee and a drunkard. And she remained chaste to him. I guess he did not interfere with her Krishna consciousness, but anyway, but at least he got drunk. He was the type of drunk that was peaceful when he got drunk. Actually, Prabhupada said there's two types of drunk people. One type gets a little violent and talks a lot, and the other type goes to sleep. So if you have to drink, be the type that goes to sleep. That's much better. Balaram was the type that talked a lot, got angry. But because he's God, he can get away with it. Actually, incidentally, even in Krishna's pastimes, they take honey wine. When they're having their rasa dance, they all drink honey wine and get intoxicated. It's interesting, isn't it? So everything's there in the spiritual world. You know, intoxication, all these things that were the four regulative principles that we're warned against. Not meeting, of course. But you get to do them in the spiritual world, at least some of them. So that's nice. You get to take intoxication and be with Krishna just, or Balaram. So anyway, so getting back to the point of Prabhupada's sister. The Prabhupada's sister, she stayed married to this drunk guy, you know, he ate meat and everything like that. And she prayed for him, and he became a great devotee. It's pretty interesting, isn't it? So you have that example, too. And Prabhupada said she was a pure devotee, too. Pishima, that's Prabhupada's sister. She actually looked like Prabhupada. When I saw her, she just looked like a female Prabhupada. It was pretty amazing. She was pretty amazing. And ISKCON devotees served her, and she was a real pushy lady, too. Extremely pushy. Like, she would push her way into Prabhupada's servants' quarters and lie on their bed and sleep. And she would push her way into serving Prabhupada things that weren't good for him, like eggplant, fried, you know, mustard oil, which is probably the worst possible thing you can give someone who has a liver disease. Yeah. And anyway, so, but you see that in that instance, she stayed with him when there was a hope for Krishna consciousness. So these are different grahasta or grihamedi or different marriage circumstances. So in our Krishna consciousness movement, the devotees should endeavor to be grahastas. That means that in their home, they should have spiritual programs, just like in the temple. Because if you're going to make the temple an ashram, you have to follow the same thing in your home. You know, have your deities, you wake up early, you chant Hare Krishna, you offer your food to Krishna. You follow the four regulated principles, you bring up your children in Krishna consciousness. And then your home is as good as a temple. And then the sannyasis don't have to run away right after taking a little milk. Then you don't have cooties anymore. That'd be interesting. You go to someone's door. Just bring me some milk. And they bring milk. Get me out of here. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Because actually it said that if you see the face of a materialist, you're supposed to go running to the Ganges and take a bath immediately. Without even putting on your swimming suit. You know, you're just like, not even supposed to take the time to put your gumshoe or anything on, just like jump in the Ganges. Of course, if we were to follow that injunction, we'd have to keep a spray bottle of Ganges water with us all the time. Yeah. No, but we could actually take one of those spray bottles they use for plants for Tulsi Devi, and all the time, something like that to keep ourselves purified. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had many grahasta followers, disciples, associates, and particularly one of his most intimate associates was Ramananda Roy. You know, there's Ramananda Roy, of course, and Swarup Damodar Goswami Sikhi Mahiti and Sikhi Mahiti's sister too. So, you know, so you had like a lady and a grahastha who were two of his most intimate associates. So it's very interesting because, you know, you do have these injunctions about sannyasis and ladies too. So really you understand that Lord Chaitanya saw people based on the level of their spiritual advancement. And Prabhupada also said, because there was one sannyasi one time who was criticizing women, and Prabhupada said, if a lady is a devotee, then we want her association. And then even, we have many ladies in our sampradaya who were gurus, you know, acharyas. That's interesting too, isn't it? Like nowadays in ISKCON, of course, we've been trying to arrange for some ladies to become gurus in our movement. There's one lady, I tried to put her name up. Her name is Narayani. I think she might have visited this area. You might know her. Very nice devotee. Very nice devotee. But we've received so much opposition, particularly from some people in India. And we've been asked to put the whole proposal on hold, you know, just to, because many people in India are getting upset that, you know, a lady might be a guru in our movement. It threatens their whole idea of male supremacy or something like that. That's unfortunate because our philosophy is that if someone is a kiva vipra kiva nyashi shudra kena naya krishna tatva veda se guru hoy. If one knows the science of Krishna, whether they're a shudra or learned person or sannyasi or grahastha, then they can be accepted as guru. I mean, we're not based on the bodily platform. This would be a big mistake in our philosophy to think that because someone's in a particular ashram, then they are necessarily more advanced, or because someone is a particular gender, they're necessarily more advanced. I mean, that devotees sometimes think like that. I mean, I remember many years ago, people used to think when you became a sannyasi, it's just like, it was like being a pure devotee. And even so, one devotee asked about a guru, or let's say about a guru, this is even more interesting. There was one person who was allowed to become a guru in ISKCON. I mean, he's a nice devotee. And then, and one of the brahmacharis asked me, when did he get his pure devotee initiation? Like, you know, all of a sudden by taking a position that you are necessarily more advanced in devotional service, or, you know, pure just because you change your dress or you have some service for Krishna. I mean, this is simply external. You know, we should consider people based on people, men, women, and even children, based upon their level of spiritual advancement. And the level of spiritual advancement can be ascertained. It's not a difficult thing. Of course, you can't ascertain whether someone is a gopi or a coward boy or a tree or a cow. I mean, those things are beyond our purview, our ability to discriminate or see. But you can see if someone is on the platform of Nishtha, if someone is Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam, is repeating the words of his spiritual master, someone who was actually serving his or her spiritual master. I mean, this is pretty easy to see. Just like we have our ISKCON, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So if someone is actually serving Prabhupada, they're members of ISKCON. And it's actually quite funny. Not funny, it's just not in the funny in the sense of hilarious. It's funny in the sense of hard to understand. It's actually quite hard to understand how someone who has left Prabhupada Society, who previously used to be a member of Prabhupada Society or disciple of Prabhupada, can say that he's a bona fide guru when he's disobeying one of the primary instructions that Srila Prabhupada gave, which is to cooperate and remain within a society and work under the administrative structure or spiritual structure, the hierarchy, whatever you may call it, that Srila Prabhupada has given. Because that is Prabhupada's, one of his primary orders, requests to his disciples. So how can someone be a bona fide guru if they're disobeying a primary order of the guru? It bewilders me. It bewilders me as far as to understand how people can think like that. It's just like, you know, for me, I was brought up with, in mathematics, you know, mathematics and physics and science. So for me, you know, I'm more or less left-brained. You know, left-brained? You know, right brain means mushy gushy. Oh, he's so nice. He may not chant Hare Krishna, he may not listen to his guru, but so nice. Just turns me on. That's right brain. And actually, women are more intelligent than men because they have more interconnections between the two brains, the two halves of the brain. With the men, they tend to be, I mean, it's Kali Yuga, so the men are more sentimental nowadays. Anyway, they can only think with one half of the brain, and the other brain is the other half of that. So, it means they haven't used it for so long. It's just like, it's as good as dead. So, and, you know, it just bewilders me. You know, like, I just think in terms of mathematics. Like, to be a disciple, to be a guru means you have to follow, be a disciple, right? Disciple means discipline. I'm just doing this equation in my head. Discipline means you follow the order of the guru. Yes? The order of the guru is to stay within ISKCON. Therefore, one who does not follow the order of the guru is not a disciple, and therefore is not a guru, isn't it? I mean, you can do the syllogism. You can do, you know, syllogisms. Anybody here study logic? This, therefore, that. That, therefore, this. And then you go backwards a little bit. And then you do a negation. Anyway, I'm not going to teach you logic, but that's just life. And so people just don't think logically. Insofar as association, insofar as taking shelter, they just think with their right brain. We should start thinking with our left brain, too. Is that true? And right brain. You know, we got to have a heart, too. It's not that we're just... Like someone just told me that a sannyasi came to their home, sat down, ate prasadam, didn't talk to them. No feelings. You know. That we don't want either, you know. Not how are you, how are the children... Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. That's you know, you got to have a balance in the two halves of the brain. But, you know, but you got to use your intelligence. Christian consciousness is called buddhi yoga, so you're able to discriminate on the basis of intelligence. You know, the feelings are there, but you can know which ones to accept and which ones not to accept. That's the point. You know, if a feeling is not Krishna conscious according to your intelligence, or it leads you in the wrong direction, you just say goodbye feeling. You know, maybe difficult, but you chant a little bit, you know. Chant a little bit, you know, beat yourself with your shoes on your head. Like Bhakti Santa Saraswati Thakur, or with a cane, you know, just. But eventually it goes away. Unless you're obsessive compulsive. You know what obsessive compulsive is? It's a disease. It's like Lady Macbeth. Anyone knows about Lady Macbeth? No. Anyone study Shakespeare? No. She had this hand washing compulsion because she was guilty of murder. So she's that's a compulsion. That's called a compulsion where people do it. Or people, let's say, lock the door and they go back and check 200 times to see if the door is locked. That's a disease. It's called compulsive disease. I know, you know, people have it. You know, that it's like they do some ritual like that over and over again. You know, washing hands, checking the keys, you know, 100 times. And then obsession means you keep thinking of something over and over and over again. So most of us don't have that disease. If you have that disease, see your neighborhood psychiatrist, and he'll help you with that. But, of course, we should be obsessed with Krishna consciousness and have compulsive thoughts about Krishna. You know, compulsive activities, chanting Hare Krishna. You know, sometimes psychiatrists say that about devotees. They have obsessive compulsive behavior. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Because they just, compulsively. One time I was in an airplane and it was landing and I was going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And the person next to me put his hand around me and said, don't worry, everything will be all right.
I don't like
that. He's not the worry bee, right? I said, that's all right. So it happens, isn't it? You know, when they see a devotee on an airplane, it causes them some worry. So nowadays I just put a blanket over my head. Well, they think I'm sleeping. That, I don't go back. So, we should use our intelligence to pick our association. And if someone knows the science of Krishna, then we should want their association, whatever ashram they're in. Or isn't it? It doesn't really matter. Like Ramananda Roy, not only was in the householder ashram, but he also was considered a Shudra by caste. And even when Brahmins first saw Lord Chaitanya embracing Ramananda Roy, they were shocked. You know, how is this great sannyasi embracing this low-class man? And they were both crying. You know, something's going wrong here. They were thinking, what's happening? They had a, what we call a double take. They couldn't believe this was happening. So that's the point. We ascertain someone's level of spiritual advancement, and if it's there, then we could associate with them. We don't need to just run away from people's homes like this. And of course, another point, just the final point here, is that when a spiritualist, whether they're grihasthas, vanaprasthas, sannyasis, or brahmacharis, visits someone's home, they make that place a place of pilgrimage. It's called tirtha. The word tirtha basically means a crossing place. Too bad Narayan's not here. It means like a portal. A portal? He would like that. He would love that. So a portal, a portal is like some place you can just like enter in the universe and end up a million, billion, trillion miles away in some other universe without even going to. You're worried about the speed of light, going faster than the speed of light. So that's literally what the word tirtha means. It means a portal, a crossing. It means a crossing place. It means like a bridge that you can cross from one side of the river to another. So the person who is a spiritualist, he makes a place of pilgrimage, and also purifies pilgrimage places. Both things are there. Okay, so any other questions or any questions or comments about anything I said? Yes. Whoop. Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise,
yeah, you have to have at least a preliminary attraction or desire.
So how can we increase that taste?
Increase the taste? Taste comes from bhakti, it comes from good association. From hearing and chanting. Hearing and chanting. But sometimes we may experience that we're not feeling that taste. So the intelligence has to be married very strong that, yes, I know that's faith. Faith that even though I'm not experiencing this happiness right now, I know the happiness is there. Because it's not that one has that. In the beginning, say, we were talking about this last night, it's not that one has this happiness or taste all the time. I mean, just frankly, the conditioned soul, sometimes the conditioned soul feels like doing something else. you know, you hear about something, you know, like yesterday we were hearing about the, well, water park or something like that, going down the slides. So, you know, the mind becomes attractive even if one has a taste. Or one time I was driving in Serbia with Maharata, and we went by this place where they do hang gliding. You know what hang gliding is? You know, where they, you know, they jump off cliffs and it. I've always wanted to do that. So, I said to Maharata, I said, let's go. Let's do this. I said, nobody else will see us. Yeah, because, you know, basically I was attracted to doing it. It was, it was fun, you know. I didn't do it. But anyway, so, but then I was thinking, several thoughts went through my mind. Before I thought about intelligence, I thought, what if I get hurt? How will I explain it to the devotees? Oh, he was dancing in ecstasy. And he broke his leg, you know, just like. And then I thought, then I used my intelligence and said, well, I'm a servant. Actually, it's a question of self-identification. I said, you know, I'm Prabhupada's servant. Would Prabhupada want me to do this? Mm-hmm. If Prabhupada was here, would he say, go for it? I try to think of a way he would. I say, well, maybe if I have a little banner that says Hare Krishna in back of it. Then maybe Prabhupada would say it's a good idea. But it was too much of a stretch of the imagination. So I would say that in the beginning stage, before our taste is steady, that it's a question of identification. I would say that perhaps that's even more important than taste in the beginning, is the identification, because the tastes come and go in the beginning stage. That, who am I? Not just that I'm spirit soul, that doesn't give me any nectar, you know, spirit soul. Who cares, you know? I'm spirit soul, well, this spirit soul wants to enjoy, you know. This spirit soul is identified with the body, and I'm going to try my best. You know, so just to say you're spirit soul, to me, that's not any sort of identification that helps me in Krishna consciousness. So I just think, you know, I'm a servant to Prabhupada, and I want to please Prabhupada. That's just a taste. That's a taste of bhakti, actually. That's actually a higher taste than simply pleasure. Because some devotees, like the story of Daruka, he decried the taste he had. When he was fanning Krishna, he started to shiver and cry. He said, let this ecstasy go away, because it's interfering with my service. So, but the real deeper taste is the desire to please Krishna and his representative. So that's, you know, what you're saying is true, and I'm just putting it in with the self-identification. You know, who am I? I belong to Krishna. That's a hard one. Instead of, you know, so much belongs to me, you know, so much is mine today, so much will be more tomorrow. He is my enemy, I have conquered him. That demoniac nature. That I belong to Krishna. Not only I belong to Krishna theoretically, but I'm supposed to give Krishna pleasure. I'm supposed to give Prabhupada pleasure. And so therefore, I said to Maharata, I guess we can't go. And he was disappointed, but anyway, what can you do? So that's the same thing as Samitpani, which means basically fetching water or firewood for the spiritual master, but the identification being that I'm a servant. And in the Prahlad Maharaj's description of the Bhagavatam, he says that Brahmachari Guru Kule Vasundhanta Guru Hitam Archiyan Dasapan Nichil. He says the Brahmachari or Brahmacharini goes to the ashram of the spiritual master and learn several things, you know, good behavior, everything like that. But for the purposes of this discussion, Dasavan, I'm a servant. That means, Dasavan means full of service. Not only I'm a servant, but I'm complete in service. Like we have Bhagavan, which means complete in opulence or full of opulence or unlimited opulence. And Dasavan means full of service. So So if we have that identification in our intelligence that this is who I am, and I really want to give pleasure, that's a taste too, that I really want to give pleasure to Krishna as a representative, then controlling the senses becomes easier. It's easier. I mean, you know, sometimes the senses are like wild horses. They're going to want to go somewhere. I remember one time I went horseback riding, and the horse wasn't really well trained, and I wasn't well trained either. So. And the horse knew I wasn't well trained. And so the horse took me to the next county. I mean, I couldn't get off. Because it was Hare Krishna, save me. I finally, when he slowed down, I jumped off the horse. So the senses are like that sometimes. That they're just like wild horses. Senses in the mind. Just like wild horses. And it's not easy. It's really not easy to restrain, or not only restrain the senses, but, you know, different moods that we may be experiencing. We were talking yesterday about nishta, you know, being steady. So it definitely, even because of the physiological happenings in the body, you know, chemicals and things like that, different tendencies towards moods come out. Isn't it? When you're real tired, you may get grumpy. You know, like your children may say, I can see you're real tired, Dad, you know, go take a nap. I'm not going to ask you if they ever say that. It doesn't happen. All right, so, you know, come back and speak to me after you've taken a nap. So, or you've eaten, here's some sweets for you. So, it's just because of physiology, you know, the endocrine system and the other, you know, chemical systems in the body, then there's a tendency to feel or think in a certain way or get more angry. You know, when one's blood sugar is low, there's a tendency to be angry, isn't it? You get agitated really easily. So it requires a lot of use of intelligence and that identification of myself as a servant to be able to pull yourself back. You know, am I supposed to do this pleasing? That's a question I ask. Is this pleasing to Prabhupada? And, you know, of course I try to justify every damn thing, but I'm not always successful in my justification, you know. You know, is it pleasing to Prabhupada to get an iPad? You know, oh, yes, it's definitely pleasing. Because I'm able to broadcast. You know, I can justify a lot of things in my mind. You become expert after so many years of Krishna consciousness. So, okay. Does that answer the question? Is there any other questions? Yeah.
You said that Mongol is criticizing, we want to give them a hot food. Why would we criticize? Because we want to feel superior?
Why did he criticize? Why do we criticize? Well, that's interesting. Usually, and this is my analysis of the situation, and it's also based upon what I teach in empathic communication. Usually, we criticize because of we want to feel secure. We want appreciation. We want recognition. We want love. I mean, there's many different things like that. Why we, you know, just tracing out envy. You know, where does envy come from? It's because, basically, we're envious of someone because, of course, you could say externally, we want what they have. I mean, that's an external thing. But, you know, what is the need? Because we want to be loved. I mean, like if I see someone getting so much appreciation, you know, another sannyasi walks in, and everybody goes, jai, 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 and they don't pay attention to me. Then, you know, if I feel envious, it's because I want appreciation, I want love, I want reciprocation, all those other things like that. You know, rather than beat myself up, you know, that you're just an envious snake. I mean, that's one way you can deal with it. And it doesn't really help, you know. So I like to see envy, not as something exactly positive, but as an indication of some basic need that needs to be fulfilled. And basically, you know, if we don't get all the appreciation we want for it. There was one famous comedian who would always say, nobody appreciates me. And he would tell jokes about it. I don't know if you ever saw it. Anyways, an American comedian. So then that may be an indication that Krishna wants us to go deeper and have a relationship with him in his holy names. Right? So you could take your understanding that you're envious or experiencing envy. You're not envious, you're experiencing envy. As an impetus to chant better and go deeper. Go deeper into Krishna consciousness. Understand? So, you know, as far as a moga, I didn't really analyze him. We could guess at it, you know, why was a moga criticizing Lord Chaitanya? Because, basically, I guess his wife was paying more attention to Lord Chaitanya than to him. It's like, you know, sometimes a sannyasi comes to your home and then your wife feeds him and then you're thinking, you know, hey, what about me? Or just like, I know you're not feeling like that. Here's another example from household life. When people get married, the wife is serving the husband, but as soon as there's a baby... You know, before the husband was like, it was like everything. Oh, Prabhu, Swami, you know, everything like that. And then there's a baby. And he's like, and then the husband, the only business of the husband then is to help change the diapers sometimes, you know. So he gets demoted. So I've seen many, many men get, you know, pretty upset when that happens. I'm sure he is, but anyway. The men get upset because, you know, they had all these expectations. You know, and the typical thing in ISKCON is, you know, before the people get married, is the lady is putting flowers on the man's plate and then ironing his clothes and everything like that. And, you know, all this attention, you know, and everything like that, and then talking for hours on the phone. I can't figure out what they say on the phone, you know, for hours. For me, a phone call is just, you know, hello, how are you doing? Fine. Okay, see you later. What can you talk about for hours? It's just unbelievable. Or texting. You know, I look at a disciple's mobile phone and I, you know, a disciple who's romantically inclined or engaged. And challenge, whatever you're doing. And then so many texts on there. One time I was, what was it? Oh, yeah. One of my disciples worked for the telephone company. So I wanted to see how many texts another disciple was sending. So, it's not legal. But anyway, he gave me a printout. What?
But it was justified.
It's justified. There was a reason for it. There was actually a reason. It wasn't just idle curiosity. It was just because I was afraid that something improper was going on and it was an investigation, okay? But there was like pages and pages of texts. You couldn't see the messages. You just see when they were sent. And just, wow.
You could also show you the messages, but
you know, I said, if I love Krishna so much as this, I'd be dancing in the Rasa dance by now. You know? So the point is then the child's born and the husband doesn't get his attention and he's envious. I guess he's experiencing envy. Because, you know, he wants love, so he may just have to go bowling with the boys to get some love. You know, because when you're always demanding that someone fulfills your need, after a while it's going to be frustrating. Except Krishna fulfills all your needs, but we don't demand from him. We say, Krishna, you may crush me by your embrace, leave me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You're free to do anything. You could say that to your wife or your husband, right? That would be real love. You know, can you imagine a wife and her husband saying that to each other? You crush me, your embrace, leave me brokenhearted. Via debauchee, you know, that's literally how it's translated in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Via debauchee, you know, run around with other men and women. It doesn't matter, you'll always be my worshipful Lord. I couldn't imagine. People saying that in this world, could you? I mean, just be, huh? But with Krishna, we do that. So basically, Krishna says, what is it? Nitya nitya nam chaitanya chaitanyam eko bahonam yobadagati kama. Krishna's fulfilling all of our needs. So if our needs are not fulfilled with one particular strategy, then we look for another strategy, and then we won't feel envious.
Legal strategy.
Yeah, sorry about that. Legal, like moral, ethical strategy. Ethical, moral, legal, religious bonafide strategy. Bona fide, you know, whatever bona fide means. then we look for another strategy. And obviously, I mean, what I find is that strategy is with Krishna and his holy names. I mean, I've experienced sometimes that with disciples, they're not always disciplined. Anyway, so... And sometimes a disciple, you know, just out of some reason from their brain, will actually turn against the spiritual master. And then you had all these expectations of the disciple being subservient or obsequious. You know what obsequious means? That means always wanting to serve. And then they turn against you, and even may go on the internet and say nasty things about you. But that's a lesson we all learn. You know, that ultimately our relationship is with Krishna. And so you take that as an impetus. When that happens, then you take it as an impetus to pick up your japa beads and you chant, you take shelter of Krishna's names. And that relationship with Krishna through his names is very satisfying. It's very satisfying to do that. And then, you know, why would you become envious if you have everything? If you have Krishna, Purna Shuddha, complete, Nitya Mukto, Minatvam Namanamino. When you have Krishna, that means you have everything. I mean, and sometimes as devotees or as conditioned souls, we look at the negative, but we should count our blessings. You know, what do we have? We've been given the greatest knowledge, we've been given the greatest process, we've given association with Gaurdatai, the deities. You know, so let's count the positives, you know, write them all down. But instead, we tend to write down the negatives. You know, like, oh, my wife doesn't love me enough. Or my disciples aren't obedient enough. You know, you got so many positives, I think they completely outweigh, you put them on a scale or a balance, any of the negatives that may be there in your life. I mean, look at what great devotees like Haridas Thakur had to go through. I mean, we complain. You know, isn't it we complain about things? Oh, this happened to me, that happened to me. You know, Haridas Thakur was whipped in 22 marketplaces. If we get yelled at once, we're ready to leave Krishna consciousness. But Haridas Thakur, you know, so look at our fortunate situation. Hare Krishna. So, any other questions? Count your good fortune. Don't count your bad fortune. Any other questions or comments?
Just something for me.
Yeah.
In our attempts to develop the community in Sarajevo, we've heard that some people, sometimes also including myself, are unhappy with the fact that they are not really, you know, bond with others sometimes. There is a community, we have classes in the temple, there is official programs, but once we leave, we don't really have with everyone.
Right.
Relationship. Is that bad? Is that okay? Is that normal?
Maybe you should all chant Kumbaya and then join hands. You ever heard of that before? Kumbaya.
In this particular case, I'm not asking this question.
I understand.
A few others, but
I think there has to be interaction between devotees. In other words, The temple may, the temple environment may not be the ideal environment for bonding. So therefore, you have these other things. Didati pratigranati guyamakyati prachati. The one-to-one relationship. You invite people to your home. I mean, this is what I tell the devotees all the time, that if you have problems in relationships, invite the person to your home for prasadam. Take prasadam with the person. And you go over to their home. Or you may have some, like, picnics or something like that, or yatras. You go on a yatra together. You go to Vrindavan, or you go... Like the summer camp is good for that, where everyone's living, you know, real close quarters, associated with each other. I mean, I don't think I get to know anybody at the temple. Any temple. I mean, it just doesn't work like that. Temple is a formal environment. I mean, I try to be, as you see, more informal wherever I am, but still, it's a formal environment. But when you go to people, their home, you go somewhere with them, you know, you go bicycling with them or something like that, then you develop relationships. And that's really... I mean, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did that. It's not that... You don't hear about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu developing so many close relationships in the temple. As soon as he left the temple, he went to Haridas Thakur's house, poured him prasadam. Saw Rupa Goswami at the same time. And so, you know, the relationships were developed. Lord Chaitanya went swimming with his associates and they had water fights, right? And then Narendra Sarovara. I mean, there's so many stories like that. So it's not that we should confine our association just to the temple. And devotees can do things, you know, that maybe it may not be directly hearing and chanting. They can do things and go places together. I'm not talking about skydiving or anything, or hang gliding. I associated with devotees at the rock and roll concert last night. You know. Well, we all went to Pizza Hut and ate pizza together last night with devotees. You know, if I have to be in Maya, it's good to be in Maya with devotees. I wouldn't want to be in Maya with non-devotees. So you do things, yeah. So devotees should, you know, invite, like grahasas, invite people there. You take prasada, you sit down. You can watch a Krishna conscious video. It's just simple things like that. Exchanging gifts, revealing one's mind and confidence, giving, taking prasada. This is how our movement increases. You know, the temple's for focusing our mind and concentrating on our goal, but the society is an international society for Krishna consciousness is very important. That aspect is very important too. Develop a society. That means friends. Does that make sense? So that's how you do it. Obviously, I mean, you're not going to bond in the temple that much. You know, just like taking your wampers out. You know, wampers. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I'm bonding. That may be a male bonding ritual. You understand? The males have their bonding rituals like in the jungle. You know, two monkeys approach each other. Of course, they don't chant. But in this way, they bond with each other. Sometimes I say things I don't believe that I said. So, I can't believe, you know, afterwards, why did I say that? So basically, we bond with each other by giving gifts, exchanging. You get the six loving exchanges. I mean, Rupa Goswami is listed. You know, it's not that, you know, I've seen people, sometimes they chant together, and then after that, they wouldn't say a single word to each other. But we have to, and also, you know, we see that everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. We should love everyone. I mean, that's a Vaishnava that actually has love for everybody, and not finding fault and not being too judgmental. What did Jesus Christ say? We hate the sin, but not the sinner. And too often, because we become so much immersed in rules and regulations, we start to hate the sinner. And that's not good, you know. And even Jesus Christ said, another little Christian thing, that he is without sin, let him throw the first stone. You know, they're attacking this poor prostitute. She became a great devotee. Yeah, so you know, that's how we should think. We don't have to love what people are doing, but we should love people. So any other questions? Interesting topic. So, I guess this is our last class here. And this afternoon we'll be meeting with some devotees about center, and hopefully we'll see a lot of devotees at the camp. And we can all bond. I heard that someone said last night they're going to have the Rath Yatra at the exit. Does anyone have any information about that?
Why didn't we hear that?
Somebody also told me like this, but I'm not sure.
That would be wonderful. And that, I mean, for years, whenever I see this exit fest, because I stay right near there, in Petrovaradin, it's in the fort in Petrovaradin. I'm just thinking, how can we preach there? I mean, one year I had encouraged Maharaja to take his cookies and everything like that and sell them. They didn't sell it so well, because mainly people are drinking beer there. It's mainly a beer fest.
We know all details about festival, too.
Mm-hmm.
In Krishna Gauranga and yeah. Over there, behind.
You know all the details?
Of course, we yeah. Know.
So we should, yeah, it would be nice if we could have a Rath Yatra there.
Last year, was you were?
Yeah, last year I was there, and actually I went in one year to exit, but I wasn't too happy about that. But just to see what it was. Of course, they searched me for drugs on the way in. I had some aspirins with me, and they took me to the doctor to examine the aspirins. You know, I carry some aspirins with me. So, and they let me in eventually. Because the aspirins had the little B on it that meant it was Bayer. So, anyway, so... otherwise, they were thinking it was LSD drops or something like that. So then, and then another year I arranged for devotees to distribute books right outside the Exit Fest. You remember that? Gokulendra and some of the other devotees were distributing books. And I'm very happy because whenever I see a crowd of people, I'm thinking that we have to be there preaching to those people. I feel real bad if devotees are not there, because that's my training in Krishna consciousness. When I was young, we would find these different fairs and festivals and we would preach at them. In America, they have these state fairs where you have like hundreds of thousands of people come over a week. You've been to them, right? A few. You've seen how big they are, right? So we would go there and distribute Prabhupada's books at the state fairs. And so whenever I see people, I think we have to be there. So when I see the Exit Fest or Exit Festival, then I think we have to be there somehow or other. At least giving out prasad in the holy names or something like that. It's just, I don't feel good about just driving past them. So maybe one year we can do Rath. Hopefully this year we can do Rath Yatra. That would be great. At least in the entrance, they won't let us in, you know, obviously. I couldn't picture us going onto the main stage and having a Hare Krishna thing. So, I guess that's it. So thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Jai. Gaur Premananda, Hari Hari Bol.